Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
Agricultural researchers work hard to ensure that our food supply is safe. Let's go in depth with Aaron Bowers with Iowa State University Extension and Outreach.
So, Aaron, can you tell me a little bit about your research?
Sure. So I do a lot of mycotoxin research in grains and also grain byproducts. So mycotoxins are toxins that are produced by fungus. There's different kinds of mycotoxins, and they tend to be associated with different types of crops and also different types of weather conditions. So if a certain type of fungus really likes hot, dry conditions, then we have some hot, dry conditions during the peak growing season in Iowa, we might end up seeing aflatoxins because that particular mycotoxin is the fungus that produces that mycotoxin really likes hot, dry conditions. This year, we actually are seeing a mycotoxin that goes by three names. So some call it DON, some call it deoxynivalenol, others call it vomitoxin. So that one tends to kind of like the cooler, humid conditions. So the fungus grows on the crops. It can then, as a secondary effect, it can produce these toxins, and then we have to worry about managing them in our grain supply and also in any feed that would be fed out because they can cause some negative health effects in animals and in humans as well.
So explain it to me. Are funguses related to molds? Or are they a subset or completely different things? Because I think of like mold and grain rather than
fungus. You're thinking of the same thing. Yep,
okay.
So moldy grain. If you have moldy grain, you may not necessarily have mycotoxins, but if the right kinds of molds are there, then you may. So they can happen in the field, and they can also happen in storage.
And so they create these mycotoxins as sort of a natural byproduct of their life?
Being themselves, yep. So not, like I said, I just want to make sure I'm clear about it. Not all fungi, not all of the moldy grain you see would have mycotoxins in it. But there are some kinds that do produce these toxins. And it's just a natural thing that happens, and so we can't really entirely prevent them. But, you know, general strategies to reduce their occurrence are just those that would also promote good crop health and also good storage practices. So if you're using best management practices for producing and storing your grain, then you really are doing what you can, and you probably are going to have fairly good success. There are occasions where it gets out of our hands. For example, you know, we don't irrigate our crops, so sometimes if we get really hot, dry conditions for a long time in late July and August when, you know, the grain's really starting to fill, you know, sometimes that can pose an issue and we run into problems. But generally, like I said, you know, if you're growing your grain with good practices, you know, taking advantage of pest control measures and all of that kind of stuff, then, you know, using good harvest and drying practices, so, you know, getting it pretty rapidly dried down to, you know, 15% moisture content. Once you get that grain dry, there's not really any water available for any more fungus to grow. It kind of needs that water. And so if you can dry your grain, you halt essentially the production. You halt the fungal growth, and so you can halt the production of any further mycotoxins.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Aaron Bowers with Iowa State University Extension and Outreach.
Now, does this happen with corn and beans and, I guess, dried distillers grains we've got to think about, too? Is it across all of those or just one or different challenges with each?
Yeah, so we tend to worry about these mostly in some of the starchy grains. So corn is one we worry about also because it's such a principal crop grown here in the Midwest. Wheat can also suffer from mycotoxins. Other grains can as well. We tend to not worry about them quite so much in soybeans, although they can occur. It's just less likely. What happens then as we're, you know, going through processing and taking corn, for example, that's and making ethanol and getting DDGs out of it that we're going to use for animal feed. What happens is if you have contaminated corn, you know, the processing steps to make ethanol don't necessarily get rid of those mycotoxins. In fact, we know that they don't get rid of those mycotoxins. What actually happens is the corn, you know, of course, it gets ground up and it gets fermented, and then you distill off the ethanol, and then you actually end up with all of that solids left over, which is your DDGs. Well, all of the mycotoxins that were in the original grain that got fermented now are kind of concentrated in the DDGs. And so we use kind of a general rule of thumb that whatever was in the originating grain for mycotoxins will be concentrated about 3 times in the DDGs. And so you have to be careful then when feeding those out as an ingredient. This year in particular, because swine are a little bit sensitive to deoxynivalenol, and we did see some higher levels of deoxynivalenol, especially in the central and eastern part of the state, you have to monitor them a little more closely because you can get feed refusal and vomiting and some other negative health effects, especially in swine that consume DDGs contaminated at too high of a level. So if you're using them as a feed ingredient, it's not a bad thing, but you just need to be aware that they can occur and that you need to also be monitoring, or there should be some monitoring of those levels by the ethanol industry just to protect the users. So the FDA actually has some levels that they kind of recommend as good practice to not exceed. And so for DON, that's 5 parts per million in grains and grain byproducts. But they also specify that those products that, you know, are potentially contaminated at that level shouldn't exceed 20% of their diet. So if those rules can be followed, then you shouldn't have any negative health effects.
But how do I know that that I'm following the rules? Does the outfit I bought the distiller's grain from, do they tell me that? Or do I have to be measuring something? Or do I have to wait till my hogs get sick?
Oh, well, hopefully not. So we are actually recommending that there be some testing going on in the ethanol industry. And there is. They tend to do a very good job of that. And so if you want that information, you can definitely be asking for it. But in general, this is something that the ethanol plants are aware of, and they're trying to monitor their incoming grain to make sure that they're producing a safe product. So I know that there is a lot of effort going on in the ethanol industry to produce safe DDGs, and they are aware that this is an issue.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Aaron Bowers with Iowa State University Extension and Outreach.
But it isn't just from the ethanol plants, is it? It's in corn that you just might buy at the co-op or buy from a neighbor.
Yep.
Or in your own corn.
Yep, it may be. It may be in your own corn. There are testing labs that you can use. We actually, also if you are considering doing any testing, there are some proper procedures that you can use to sample a grain and send out to an external testing lab. And so if you would like more information about that, we do have some educational modules that are free for anyone to look at, and they can be accessed through the Iowa Grain Quality Initiative website. So there's a couple modules there if people are interested in just getting more knowledgeable about mycotoxins and when and how they occur, and then also some of these testing considerations. So there is more information available.
Is it worse this year, or is it something we need to be concerned about every year?
You know, it's not necessarily something to be concerned about every year, but this year we just, like I said, and actually, you know, like I kind of talked about, some of these different fungi like different weather, and so in different years, depending on what weather we have, we may be concerned about one type of mycotoxin over another. So with deoxynivalenol, you know, that seems to be what we're watching from the 2016 crop. I guess I was just trying to point out that in different years we can have different risks. And so, you know, we don't necessarily have an issue every year, but there can be issues depending on climate and weather conditions. So there's a lot of extension. If you watch ISU Extension, we also try to pay attention to these things and put out notices when we're seeing things in the incoming crop and that sort of thing. So you can be aware of your local extension professionals. They may have an idea of what's going on too. So go ahead. I mean, that's a good resource to use.
The production of these toxins, you said they're just sort of an incidental byproduct of just life of the fungi, but could it be an adaptation? A lot of creatures produce toxins, you know, and some animals and plants to fend off predators or something that would eat it. Is that something that's happening with these too?
You know, that's a really good question, and I'm not sure about the from the biological perspective, if that's why they're produced. I don't know about that. It's a very good question, though. I'm not sure. What I just know is they tend to occur, and we've got to figure out how to manage and mitigate the issues after the fact, because they're not entirely avoidable. So,
what is it about this research that interests you so much?
This just has really significant impacts, especially in the Midwest, for how we grow and manage our grain. Animal food safety, it also extends to human food safety, because these toxins aren't isolated to the United States. They occur globally. And you can imagine if we're starting to get some issues in, you know, a country where corn is a dietary staple and that's all people eat, you know, you run into some significant human health issues if you're not careful, just because that constant exposure, and if we're not able to manage the levels well and there's no other source of calories, you can really have some issues. So I'm lucky to be part of some projects in Africa as well, where we're trying to work on you know, detecting and mitigating some of the issues there. You know, even by using just some more, if you want to think, more modern storage practices, that we've done really well at here in the U.S. developing, you know, just even with grain drying and all of that kind of stuff, we're trying to work on implementing that there to really, you know, just help them manage grain better so they can live healthier lives. So,
well, you know, to those of us that are lay people that, you know, are looking at this particular topic or lots of topics like that, we might not recognize the significance of it, but you go home every night and you can think, hey, everything I did today helped make the world's food supply safe.
I try to think that way. Some days in research you get lost in the tedium, you know, the tedious tasks. But big picture, yes, it's very gratifying to be able to participate and to have an impact. I'm super grateful for the job I have and just the way, you know, hopefully we can work together to, like I said, improve livelihoods. So.
Thanks to Aaron Bowers for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In-Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In-Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In-Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.